Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome, everyone. What a beautiful Seattle day we have today. Welcome to the show. We have a really packed show for you today, so I'm going to dive straight on into telling you who's coming up around 12:30-ish. I'm going to talk with Seattle entrepreneur Roger Sullivan of Wired Waffles. He had a very interesting experience. He was one of the contestants on ABC's Shark Tank. So for those who don't know, as an entrepreneur, he made a pitch to four investors, and it's televised and shown on Shark Tank on ABC. Going to talk to him about his experience on Shark Tank, also his business perspectives and views on work-life balance. But first, I am thrilled to have Andrea Kay back on the show with us. She is one of my very favorite career consultants. Everything she writes about, everything she talks about is spot on and well-researched and very practical, which, as you know, I like. So let me tell you a little bit about Andrea, and we'll bring her on. She's a career consultant and syndicated columnist who's helped tens of thousands of people find new jobs and take charge of their careers. She's the author of six books, including Life's a Bitch and Then You Change Careers. And her syndicated column, At Work, appears weekly in more than 80 newspapers and websites, many, many websites. She's also been interviewed in the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Chicago Tribune, Forbes, Money, Kiplinger. The list is endless. And she's been many, many times on public radio, on our show. She's been, I think this is her third visit, maybe fourth, I'm not sure. As I said, her work is amongst my favorite in the career section. So, Andrea Kay, welcome back to the show today.
Well, thank you for having me, Vicki. It's such a pleasure to speak with you.
Yeah, I was delighted to see your new book. It's called This Is How to Get Your Next Job, an inside look at what employers really want. And I think this is a really valuable tool for people who are looking for work or looking to change work, looking to get promotion, or, you know, even people who are happy in their jobs can learn a thing or two from this, too. But funny story, because you start off the book saying there were two reasons you wanted to write the book. Number one, you couldn't stand listening to yourself yell at the radio anymore. And number two, you wanted to know if your husband was crazy. So tell us about that.
About both of those?
Yeah.
Okay. I would find myself in the last couple years getting ready for work in the morning, and the radio would be on, and I would hear an interview with somebody about their employment or unemployment status. And they would say something like, well, I've sent out 150 resumes, and I'm not getting anywhere. And I'd yell at the radio, don't do that. That's not what you're supposed to do. And then a minute later, somebody else would say something like, well, you know, I'm looking for a job where I could find my or use my skills in communications and maybe people skills and computers. And I'd yell, don't say that. So that was happening all the time. And I was keeping track of all these things that people would say. And then my husband, who has a small business, was looking for an employee to hire. And he would come home every night with these stories of what people said and what they did and how discouraged and frustrated he was in talking to people and the emails that he would get from people, which were just terrible, full of typographical errors and people just interested in what they would get paid and just, you know, totally focused on them and having nothing to do with what they could do for the employer. And after 6 or 8 months, he just said, I give up. I'm not even going to try to find anybody. So I wanted to find out, is he crazy? Is it just him? Or is it like this everywhere? So I set out to ask other employers one question. Why didn't you hire the last 10 people that you interviewed? And that was the basis for this book. It was the frustration that I would hear from all these people doing all these really bad things that were getting in their way. And then on the other hand, the employer who was saying, we have jobs, but we just can't find good people. And I thought, if I could bring this information to employees or would-be employees, maybe I can help them get their next job.
Right. And I thought when I saw that, what a great concept, because there, I too have had problems hiring people. You know, we hear that so many people are unemployed. And yet I found I've been looking for years on and off for the right person, you know, to help me. And I get to a point sometimes where I find somebody for a little while. And it's very difficult, especially, you know, in certain regions. I understand that. But tell us a little bit about how you approach the employers. Was there something that, I know you've been doing this for years, so I'm sure not a lot surprises you anymore, but was there one thing in particular that you heard over and over and over from employers putting the book together that really surprised you?
Well, I would say that what they all told me did not surprise me, but it was it's the one thing that I've been trying to get across to people for the 25 plus years that I've been doing this, and it's the one thing that's the hardest to communicate. And people get really mad when I tell them the essence of what I heard and the essence of that message, which is that employers are frustrated and didn't hire people because of how they seemed based on how they acted. And this didn't surprise me, but it really upsets people because they feel as if they're being picked on, that employers are looking at every little thing they do and say and all the nuances that go into the communication and the, you know, the back and forth in an interview. And so people feel angry about that, and yet it's common sense. And it's really hard to explain that, and it took me two chapters, really, to get that concept across, which is that you are what you seem. Mm-hmm. You know, you can say that you are an extremely detail-oriented person and meticulous and care about making sure everything is done right and professional, but then if you send an email that's littered with typographical errors, grammar errors, and things aren't straight, your actions speak a lot louder than what you say, and so you are what you seem.
Yeah, and you know, that seems like common sense, doesn't it, that somebody's going to make a good presentation up front when they send in their resume. But we were just recently hiring a crew down in California, and I can't tell you how many resumes came in half complete and with typos in. It was really shocking.
Yeah, that's the part that is surprising. If there is anything that is surprising to me, it's how many people make the mistakes like that and many others that are so basic to just being a professional, and yet is what affects them and eliminates them from the running. And I guess that's the part that always surprises me, is the amount of people who are rushing to respond to positions they hear about, mm-hmm. who think it's a numbers game. I remember a lot of people say to me, and employers told me this too, that people are sending out, and it's even been worse in the last couple of years, just hundreds of resumes, because they figure that the more I send out, the greater the odds are that somebody will respond. And that really is erroneous thinking. It's a matter of quality, not quantity. And if you're sending out 100 resumes in a week, you can't very well send a customized professional letter that really speaks to the position and is customized to the particular job and the employer's needs, because you're just rushing off a response, and that kind of response that has no detail, no personalization, is what's turning off the employer, because they can tell you're not really interested in this position, you just want a job.
Right. One thing I find a lot is if we ask for entry level, somebody, you know, with maybe 2 or 3 years experience, it can be interpreted as, you know, we don't want someone with 25 years of experience because we're not going to pay that kind of money. And yet we'll get pitches come in, you know, asking for hundreds of dollars an hour. So that's one way as well. I think people mess up a lot is, as you said, applying for jobs that they are not going to get.
Yeah, they're not qualified for them. One employer in New Jersey told me how he got applications from mortgage brokers for designer jobs. And, you know, he just looks at this and says, what do you think I am? You know, why would I even hire you? You don't even know what this job is. And there's this level of desperation that comes across when you do that and just sending off your resume. And it's a waste of your time, too. Valuable time that you could be putting into a really well thought out and well written letter to the employer for the job that is right for you and the ones you're qualified for.
Right. So let's say we get in front of a person who is hiring, because that's the, if you get the chance to get in front of someone, you do not want to blow it. So you have a whole list of things in the book, 15 things you should never do, 15 things you should never talk about or say. Let's look at some of the things that they shouldn't say in a job interview. And you kind of touched on one earlier. Don't say something as simple as "I have good people skills." We need to get more specific than that. Give us an example of how you turn that around, if you would.
Well, first of all, the reason you shouldn't say "I have good people skills" is because everybody says it and it's meaningless. And people say it because they think it sounds good and that's what employers want. But if indeed you are good with people and employers do want you to be able to get along with others, instead of saying "I'm good with people skills," which will make them fall asleep, say "I'm really effective when it comes to dealing with people in whatever situation might be evident in this kind of job," or say I'm really good at building trusting relationships. An example of how I did that when I was with the X and J company was when I, and then give an example, or "I'm really good at being the person who mediates conflict when issues come up about billing or whatever it is." So really get more specific and tie it in to how you would utilize that ability to deal with people well or handle situations between individuals well, and tie it into what the how it would relate to the job.
Right. So have your stories ready. That's a key factor, because if you've been interviewed many times, you know, we've all been there. We know the kind of questions that are going to come up.
Right.
Let's look at, you talk about ways that we can talk about money or ways that we can find out how employers treat their employees without coming out and saying, you know, do you give raises every year? How do you treat your employees? How would you approach that?
Well, if you're trying to understand the culture, which is really what that question is about, you could, first of all, do some research on your own and ask other people who may have worked at that company, what's it like? If you're trying to find out how they deal with promotions, you know, state it in a way that's more like what does it take to move up in your company? Tell me what you're looking for in leaders, people that become leaders at your company. So instead of saying, "Do you promote people?" or "Are women fairly compensated?" things like that, that kind of puts somebody on the defensive. You want to put it in the context of showing them that you want to be a part of the company and grow with it. So state your question in that way, as opposed to "What are you going to do for me?" It's more about how can I become a leader in this company? What qualities do you look for? What's the process for that? You know, how do people go about advancing at this organization? That kind of thing.
Right. And that speaks to something that you say throughout the book. The interview is never about getting a job. Talk to us a little bit about that, if you would.
Yeah, the interview is a conversation. People think that going to an interview means I'm going to sit there and I'm going to sell you and persuade you to want to hire me. And it has taken a lot for that person and maybe a group of people to get this meeting on their calendar. And what they are doing, and what you should be doing too, is having a conversation to explore if this is a good match for you and a good match for them by hiring you. And so instead of going in trying to sell yourself, go in with the perspective that we're going to explore all of those things of what makes for a good match. And, you know, it takes the pressure off of you, and it allows the conversation to flow, and it allows them to get to know you, which is really what this initial meeting is about. They want to get to know what kind of person you are, how you think, what you've done. And you want to get to know them, too, because you need to know if it's a place you'd feel comfortable going to every day.
Right. And somebody in the book, I think it was somebody who worked at Google, said that when he's interviewing people, he is looking for people that he'd like to have a conversation with, people that he wants to be around.
Yes, that was the googliness that they told me that they look for in employees. And, you know, basically what they're saying is, you know, we're going to be hanging around together for the next umpteen years, 5 years, whatever, and we want to like each other. We want to feel good about being with you. And they used to do this thing called the airplane test, where they would say after the interview with somebody, the team of interviewers would say, so how would you feel about being with this person, you know, if we got stuck with them at the airport for the next 2 hours? Would they be interesting? Would you like to be around them? And that's really the essence of what's going on in the interviewer's mind. They're thinking, how do I feel about you? And would you fit in with everybody else?
Right. Couple of ideas that you have in the book, I'm going to kind of run them together here a little, but one of them is don't assume no one's paying attention to you once you get your job. You're always auditioning, and once employed, you need to keep yourself employable. So let's talk generally about that, if we could.
Okay, well, you're always auditioning because everybody's always watching during the interview process, and then once you get into the job, you're also being watched and potentially looked at to be groomed for a leadership position or something, you know, move somewhere, or somebody else is thinking about you for their organization within the company. So don't assume that nobody's paying attention, because people are watching. I once had a client who told me that she was told after going to these leadership meetings for years that she wasn't leadership material because she never spoke up and she never added anything to the conversation. And she had no idea that she was being looked at from that standpoint. And I forgot what the third thing was that you brought up.
Keep yourself employable.
Oh, keeping yourself employable, yes. Once you get the job, people have a tendency to think, oh, good, now I'm employed, I don't have to worry. And, you know, I got the job and I'll be safe. But really it's a matter of thinking about how to stay employable, not just employed. And so that means you need to constantly be thinking about what trends are going on out there in the world that will affect your work, your job, your company. What new skills do you need to know or have? What new information do you need to have? Who should you be talking to, learning from? Always be thinking about the next step, because the world is just changing so quickly, and your company is changing, the products and services that you offer are changing, technology is making everything move so much quicker. So you always have to be thinking about, how will I stay employable and relevant and valued?
That is so critical, and that's a good note to end our conversation on here. But I want to let listeners know you've got 17 characteristics employers look for when they set out to hire the best possible candidate for any job. Give us just two of those, if you would, Andrea.
Well, those are things like good judgment, maturity, being polite, being flexible, being adaptable. I gave you more than two, but they're personal characteristics, and that's what is so important. Everybody thinks, oh, they just hire for skills. But
nope.
If there's one thing you should remember, they hire for skills, yes, but they hire for character. And
yes,
that's what those things are.
Yes. Is there a light on upstairs? That's the one I always look for.
Oh, I love that.
Well, listeners can find out more about you at Andrea Kay. Andrea has a fabulous website, andreakay.com. It is full full of really great information if you're looking for a job, looking to change, looking to keep the one you have. And, you know, Andrea, I read your clients range from rocket science and software engineers to chefs, actors, and cowboys.
Yes, I had a cowboy once as a client.
I love it. I love it. A final quick thought you'd like to leave our listeners with.
Think like the employer. I know that this is not an easy time to be looking for a job, but there are jobs out there. But you have to put on your employer's thinking cap and think like them and think about whether you would hire you. I actually have a test in the book called that, Would You Hire You? Take that test and you will fine-tune your skills so that you will get hired for the next job that you go after.
Awesome. And the book is called This Is How to Get Your Next Job, An Inside Look at What Employers Really Want. And seriously, if you are looking to make a change, this really has some solid, practical information in here that's come straight from the word of people who hire all the time. AndreaKay.com is where you can find out more information about Andrea. And as I said, there are tons of great free resources out there. So go check it out. Andrea, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Vicki. It was my pleasure.
And we're going to take a very quick break. We'll be right back, and we'll be talking with Roger Sullivan of Wired Waffles. Please do stay with us.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Do you love wildlife? Then make a real difference by helping PAWS care for sick and injured wild animals. Volunteers help feed and clean the animals until they are well enough to return to the wild. Sign up today and help save a wild life. No experience necessary. All training is provided. Visit PAWS.org or call 425-787-2500.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to Designing Health, makers of the Missing Link supplement, we cover the world of animals. This week, April 28th, it's the last Sunday of the month, and that means it's a shelter, rescue sanctuary, and anything that helps our animal friends Sunday. We'll talk with Betsy Lott at Mollywood Avian Sanctuary up in Bellingham and visit with the All Breed Equine Rescue in Marysville, plus a few surprises on Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
In the small town of Elmira, New York, a boy was born into an all-American family. The odds of him opening his own clothing store at the age of 18? 1 in 138,000. Excited to be a part of pop culture, he packed for the big city. The odds of finding someone to invest in his vision? 1 in 4.5 million. The odds of him achieving his dream in the fashion industry? 1 in 23 million. The odds of having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 88. I am Tommy Hilfiger, and my family is affected by autism. I encourage you to learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Alternative to what? Alternative to everything else out there on the radio. Alternative Talk 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And my guest for the next segment is Roger Sullivan. He's a Seattle entrepreneur. He co-founded WiredWaffles.com. And I sat down with him at the weekend. He was going to be on the show today live, but realized he'd doubled booked because he's down in Portland Sunday and Monday at a food expo down in Portland. And so I held his feet to the fire then. can you please talk with me on Saturday? And so he was very good about making time so we could bring you the interview today. Roger Sullivan is his name. I'm going to read you the blurb that's on his website because I thought it was kind of funny. They say Roger Sullivan is the head mudslinger around here. A lifelong entrepreneur, Roger is full of it. Ideas and energy, that is. We let him think he runs things and give him just enough rope to make things happen, but not enough to crash the buzz. Heaven forbid he sees something new and shiny, but that's why we love him and we're glad he's here. And I'm going to bring the interview to you right now. Interesting story because he had an opportunity to go on ABC Shark Tank. We're going to talk about his business perspective and work-life balance. Roger Sullivan of WiredWaffles.com. Well, Roger, I want to thank you for being with us today. I know you've been an entrepreneur for quite some time, but I want to just share a little bit about your background with our listeners. I think it's always interesting to look at, what has happened to people over the years to bring them to where they are today and to the mindset they are in today. So I read that you did a little bit of Amway, a little bit of roofing. Talk to us a little bit about your background.
Yeah, it's kind of been all over the place. I got bit by, I guess, what would be called the entrepreneurial bug when I was at a very young age, 16, 17 years old. I just always sold things, and my friends called it hustling. But that's the kind of what I did. And I was always just looking for something, to do. So I would get a job and then think, oh wow, I could do this. And so I started a roofing company, and I had a car detailing company. And yeah, as you mentioned, Amway, which really kind of opened my eyes up to being able to think bigger than myself and bigger than what I could do, and just that I could accomplish anything.
Yeah, I think people always laugh when you mention Amway, but I know some people who've done exceptionally well with Amway.
Absolutely, it really is. It's a vehicle that works for certain people that have that mindset that can make it work. I have no problems with it at all. I know that it does work as well.
Right. So you tried various things. You and your wife had a coffee shop for a couple of years, which I gather was quite successful. And then you got gazumped on the rent there. So what happened after that?
After that, my wife went to work for a friend of ours that owns a couple coffee stands, and she kind of has been managing and working with him for the past, I guess, probably about 12 years. And then I kind of went to work and got a normal traditional job, but that only lasted a little while. And most recently, we started a company that we called the Espresso Shopper, and we had gone out and we would wholesale deliver into local coffee stands cups, lids, straws, syrups, things like that, things that they needed. So we've been in the specialty coffee industry now for quite a while, probably about 14, 15 years.
Yeah, maybe a natural choice being here in Seattle.
Yeah, it certainly makes things easy being here.
And so how did you come up with the concept for Wired Waffles? And first of all, tell us what they are and then how you came up with the concept.
Yeah, perfect. A Wired Waffle is it's a grab-and-go style waffle, not a traditional waffle that you would think, that's made out of batter that you pour at home and have over syrup. It's a handheld snack that's got all the flavor and everything built right into it. And how we came up with the idea, because we've been in the coffee business, we've been looking for a breakfast offering, something that was acceptable to eat, that somebody would want to eat at a coffee shop in the morning. So when you look at the offerings, there's cookies and muffins, and really a muffin is just a cake that's acceptable to eat in the morning, right?
Right.
So we were looking for something that was more breakfasty, and we were watching a special on the Travel Channel of the top drive-ins of all time across the country. And there was one about a waffle shop that's at the top of a ski resort in Vermont that people would ski up to, and they would grab these waffles. Sugar baked right into them, just ready to go. And we're like, that's it. That's what we want to do. And so we looked up a recipe, and we started making waffles, testing them at my wife's espresso stand. And they were good, and they were really popular.
And how long ago was this?
That was about a year and a half ago, almost 2 years ago, that we initially came up with that.
Well,
not too much longer after that, we saw a special on MSNBC about a bakery in the Midwest that was next to a college that was putting caffeine into snacks for college kids, and that's when the light bulb went on to put caffeine in the waffles.
Right. So, you know, we do a lot of health shows, and some people are very much against caffeine, some people are for it. Personally, I like a little caffeine every day. I don't think it does us any harm if we keep it in moderation. So just address that with us from a health perspective, if you would, because I know you've looked into it.
Yeah, absolutely. First and foremost, from the very beginning, we wanted to make sure that we were using, you know, just great ingredients. So our waffle is, it's an all-natural product. Most of the ingredients are really simple ingredients that you would find in your home, and that was something that was really important to us. We didn't want our customers to look at a label and go, well, what is that? As far as the actual caffeine that's in there, we have 200 milligrams of caffeine that's in each waffle, which is equivalent to about a 16-ounce cup of coffee that's out there. And we fully disclose everything that's in there, all of our the amount of caffeine. We've got some B6 and B12 vitamins in there, and then that's it. We kind of stayed away from a lot of the other traditional stuff that goes into some of the energy drinks and stuff because, well, I guess the research is kind of inconclusive on what they are and what they do, and we thought less would be better.
Right. So talk to us a little bit about the process of manufacturing and how you get this off the ground, because I think many people have good ideas and then they get stuck about where do I even start with this? It seems like such a huge process.
Yeah, it really is. And that's something that I've learned over the years. I've been able to surround myself with a couple business mentors and friends that have allowed me to think a little bit bigger, and I think that's kind of the big challenge for, it was a challenge for me when I started was, okay, I've got this idea, now how do I get it into fruition? And being able to talk to guys that have been through that process really helped me out. We were going to start just like, you know, you would assume that you would start, you know, with a waffle maker in the kitchen or the garage and start cranking them out. And I had a friend that said, why would you want to do that? There's companies out there that would do that for you. And so I began a search of trying to find a manufacturer that had the capabilities of the heavy iron that it takes to make this style waffle. And in my search, I found two different companies that were had the potential, first of all, to be able to create this product, and then we settled with one that actually in New Jersey that agreed to make the product for us.
Mm-hmm. And you've gone through several versions of the product itself, trial and error, and of course we're going to take a break in a couple of minutes, but and we'll talk about this when we come back. But you did another version of this after the Shark Tank experience, I understand. So how did you go through the versioning process?
The versioning process, that's a great question. It was all based on customer feedback. Every time that we would come out with a version, we would of course sample it to family and friends first, and then we would take it out to our demographic. We would go to one of the local universities. We've been up to Western Washington University, which is pretty close to us, and given away a lot of waffle samples up there, as well as a couple community colleges around our area, and then of course we've had them for sale in various coffee stands and stuff like that. And we just take customer feedback. You know, what they think: is it too dry? Is it too sweet? Is it too hard to prepare? Do we want it individually wrapped as opposed to bulk packed? Is the branding and the labeling, does that make sense? And so it's just kind of a process that you go through as a manufacturer. And again, it's been driven by our customers.
Mm-hmm. And what were a couple of the biggest challenges that you faced in the manufacturing and versioning process?
The biggest challenge, I think, was the shelf sustainability part. The first product that we came out was so completely all natural and had such a high butter content that by the time that it was brought out of the freezer or just served at a room temperature, it really only lasted about 2 or 3 days, and then it was it just got bad. And that's been our biggest challenge, is creating a product that balances a decent shelf life but still stays a natural, healthy product. Last thing we wanted to do was create a product that could sit on a shelf in ambient temperature for 3 months.
Right. So tell me a little bit about your company itself. You've got you co-founded this with your wife. You're very tongue-in-cheek on your website about yourself and your employees. Tell us about the team you work with.
We've got a great team of people that that really kind of bought into this vision and work hard every single day to make it happen. There's myself and my wife, of course, as the founders of the company. And then we have Richard Bowes, who is my best friend and our sales director. And he's a great balance because whereas I am kind of the creative type and the dreamer and kind of the vision, he is the one that really, you know, he's detail-oriented. He's the guy that, you know, you put a task in front of him and he marches through it, and he's the one that's able to do the things that I can't do. So that's fantastic, and I'm just real excited to have someone like that. Otherwise, nothing would get done.
Well, that's important, because we don't have to know everything as entrepreneurs, but we have to have the smarts to surround ourselves with smart people who balance us out, right?
That is so true. It is so true. We just can't, you know, while we're expected to know a little bit about everything, we cannot know everything about everything. It just can't happen.
Right. Well, we're going to take a very quick break. When we come back, Roger, I'd like you to share your Shark Tank experience with our listeners. It's a program I try and catch when I can. I also watch the Canadian one, Dragon's Den, and I heard the other day that 1 in 10 people in Canada watch that. So there's a lot of popularity out there. We're going to take a very quick break. We'll be right back. I'm talking with Roger Sullivan, founder of WiredWaffles.com, right here in Seattle. Please stay with us.
The odds of becoming a signed artist and having 3 number one albums? 1 in 100 million. The odds of going on to win 6 Grammy Awards? 1 in 1.4 million. The odds of this performer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 88. I'm Toni Braxton, and I encourage you to learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Vicki St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772. Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicki St. Clair.
Proud to bring variety to your radio dial. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. My guest in this segment is Roger Sullivan, Seattle businessman and co-founder with his wife of WiredWaffles.com. And I wanted to talk, Roger, with our listeners. I want to share your story about Shark Tank because I think it's really interesting to talk with somebody who's gone through that process. You share a lot of this information on your website, I'm just wondering at what point when you're busy with manufacturing, you're busy with versioning, you're busy trying to make sales, at what point did you think, I want to be on Shark Tank?
Well, I really didn't know that I wanted to be on Shark Tank, to be honest with you. I had never even heard of the show just a little over a year ago, and I had family and friends that told me, you know, you should be on that Shark Tank show. And, you know, of course, I asked what it is, and everybody just looks at me like I've been hiding under a rock. How do you not know what this show is? Right?
But if you don't watch it, you don't know, right?
So of course, I did like any entrepreneur would do. I got on the internet and said, what's this show about? And so I was reading about it on the website, and there was a shiny button that said, entrepreneurs click here. And I like shiny, so I clicked there. And it led me to a little application process, and I filled it out and I hit the send button, and I didn't think anything of it. You know, I didn't hear anything back, and you know, I'm like, okay, they get thousands of these things. I didn't really have any expectations. And probably about 3 months later, I'm standing at my mailbox and my phone rings, and I look down at it, and hi, this is Roger, can I help you? And hi, Roger, this is so-and-so from Shark Tank, and you turned in an application, and I almost dropped my phone. I thought it was like a friend, you know, punking me or something. It was kind of surreal, you know what I mean?
Right, right. And of course, we should say, because we probably have listeners who don't know what Shark Tank is, it's a show on ABC. It's a weekly show, and there are four heavy, heavy investors on that show with a lot of clout. And people can go pitch their business ideas to them. Some people are already in business, and some people want to get the business off the ground. But you already had your proof of concept. You were already going. And so they make it look so easy. You just show up and do this little pitch. I know from talking with Barbara Cochran, who used to be one of the Shark Tank people, that there are days and hours and weeks of preparation that go into that. So tell us a little bit about the kind of prep that you had to do. Did you have to go through an audition first, and then did they book you for the pitch?
Yeah, you're right. There's a lot of work that goes into the about 8 minutes that everybody sees on TV, and there's a lot of stuff that goes on behind the scenes. I did have to. There were several stages in the audition process, from pitching on the phone to sending in a video tape, and then moving along and working with associate producers to working on my pitch and getting the time down and making sure that everything's covered and that I'm representing everything well, video conferences and videos back and forth. And literally there was weeks and weeks and weeks. And throughout the whole process, they're like, there's no guarantees. We don't know if you're going to come down or pitch, but, we want you to work on this and, just kind of keep going along. And until I was literally standing in front of the Sharks, pitching, walking down the hallway, I had no idea that it was actually going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then some don't even get aired, but you did get aired.
Right, right. That was the other thing too. They said even if you pitch in front of the Sharks, there's no guarantee that you're going to air. I mean, remember this is TV and it's got to be entertaining. So whether you get a deal or not, whether you air or not is determined really on how entertaining your pitch was and what they can do with it to make good TV out of it.
Yeah. So tell us what it's like standing there in front of those four investors with TV cameras blaring, blasting all around you. I'm not easily intimidated, but I don't think I'd like to stand in front of Kevin O'Leary.
I'm friends with a lot of the entrepreneurs that have been with on the show, and all of our stories vary. But for me, I was having an absolute blast. I love being in that kind of a situation. And, when you walk into the room, there's a, I have a mark that I had to stand on, and there was quite a while where, they get everything set, they've got to get the camera angles right and the lighting set and wait for quiet on set. And so I'm standing there and all the Sharks are just staring at me, and I'm staring at them back, and I'm thinking to myself, holy cow, I can't think that I'm here. Look, there's Kevin O'Leary, Mark Cuban, there's Lori Grenier. I mean, it was pretty surreal. It was like almost seeing famous people in a coffee shop for me. And then, once they said go, then of course it was all business. But it was exciting for me to be standing there. And after you're out there and you start talking, it just kind of flows right into, okay, this is okay, these are just people. So
yeah, it sounds as though you just took that nervous energy that you probably had and harnessed it. And that's a good trait to have, to just harness it into the job at hand.
Yeah.
You said that Mark Cuban was your favorite Shark. Why?
Out of all of them there, he just seemed like the most genuine person, and I think that has a lot to do with some of the stuff that happened behind the scenes that people didn't see in my pitch. I was in there taping for almost an hour, which is kind of the average, so it's important for people to remember when they see, 8 minutes of a presentation, they're just getting a very small edited portion. But throughout my whole pitch, Mark Cuban jumped up and defended me to the other Sharks, especially Kevin. We see a little bit of that in my episode where there was some bickering back and forth. And he just really talked to me on a level that, wasn't above me. It was very like your next door neighbor talking over the fence. And I really appreciated that kind of attitude. It was great.
Yeah, he comes up. I don't know much about Mark Cuban, but I know he's a huge deal. He looks as though he's come up through the ranks, and I think that kind of grounds people a lot more.
So during this, I know you had a huge lesson when you got home. You found out that during the airing of the show, which isn't live, but during the airing of the show, the hosting, your website actually crashed a couple of times because people were trying to get on there and hopefully make purchases, and it crashed a couple of times. So good lesson there, right? Find a good hosting service.
Yeah, absolutely. And even when your hosting service tells you that, hey, we got this, yeah, they probably don't got this. They actually said, yeah, we've handled Shark Tank people before, we've got this, and, you know, they didn't. It just crashed, it crashed twice on the East Coast feed and twice on the West Coast feed, and it was horrible. We can't even imagine how many sets of eyes that we lost to our website. So.
Right. Well, lesson learned. But
yes.
So, but, you know, I think getting in front of those people has to be a win-win situation. What kind of things have happened to you and your business since then?
Yeah, it is a win-win. Like you said, I tell people all the time that I lost on Shark Tank and all I got was 8 million people finding out about my company. Since Shark Tank, there have been some good things and some bad things that have happened from the show, but the exposure has definitely given us credibility in making us, into this kind of player in the caffeinated snack industry. And we get recognition, we get all the time, I get phone calls, that we were just talked about in the Wall Street Journal yesterday or day before yesterday. So, that was pretty exciting. So since the show, we've gotten a lot of credibility, and I think that's a big, important step. You know, when we're going out and we're speaking to some of these large convenience store chains and large, grocery store chains and these brokers and stuff, and, when we say, oh, we were on ABC Shark Tank, they're like, oh, really? Wow. It kind of helps us stick out above the crowd, because there's tons of new products and lots of new things, and we're all competing for the same amount of shelf space and the same sets of eyes, but anything that we can do to, elevate ourselves is beneficial, and that's what we've been able to do with the exposure we've gotten from Shark Tank.
Right, and I read on your blog that you don't believe in buying into marketing companies and social media and PR, just for the sake of it. You say passion is the missing ingredient. So talk to us a little bit about passion and what that means to you.
You're reading my blog. That's so awesome. passion is a really important part. And, when we get approached all the time with my brokers and salesmen that, well, we can get you into here and we can get you into that. It's only going to cost you this much money, per month. And, as a small company, you have to be very, very careful where you spend the money. And even if I do spend money on marketing and stuff like that, nobody can sell or talk about my product as well as I can. Nobody is as passionate about it as I can. Now, as a leader and, founder of our company, it's my job to cast that vision and that passion onto other people, and that's how we make sales and relationships and move the brand forward. And so everybody that's on our team, whether it's, our sales director, our graphic artist, brokers in Texas or Colorado, everybody is on board with the vision and where we want to take this company and how we want it to get there and to have fun doing it. Without those pieces, I kind of just question why would it even be worth doing?
Right, right. So it goes back again to, you said you're the creative ideas person, and surrounding yourself with people who can support you with your, you have the detail person back in the office, taking care of business. Very critical to surround yourself with good people.
Yes, very, very, very important. Like I said, you have to have that balance. And if you don't know how to do something, it's okay. Just find somebody that does,
Right, right. And talking of passion, I want to talk to you a little bit about sales and get your perspective on that. I did watch Shark Tank last night, and there was a young woman on there who received no offers. Mark Cuban actually said to her, because she said, sales is not my strong point. So she didn't like to go out and sell herself. He said, why should I write a check to you if you don't have enough belief in yourself and your product to get out there and talk about it? So talk to us a little bit about your perspective on sales and promoting your business.
Yeah, that's a death comment for any entrepreneur. I mean, we're all we all sell to some extent, even just, you know, selling ourselves. But, you know, you have to be able to, if you are going to be in business for yourself, that's kind of the one thing that you have to be able to do, is you have to be able to, you know, sell, to be able to just communicate your idea to another person, to be able to, you know, infect or multiply your, you know, your passion and your brand. You have to be able to, you have to be able to do that. You have to be able to sell, you know. And I like coffee, and coffee's for closers, so.
It's for openers in the morning, too. So what do you do for fun, Roger? You obviously work very hard. You're into many things, you know, trying to boost this business. What do you do for fun?
Well, first and foremost, my wife and I are parents to four of the most amazing young men. We've got kids from the ages of 23 to 16, all boys, and family is first. We have a lot of fun hanging out and cooking, and our house is the one where everybody hangs out, and we're just very social people, so we love to we just love to hang out with family and friends, and I like to get outside. I just got a new road bike yesterday. I'm really excited about getting out and, riding. You know, if the Washington weather ever wants to
comply with you, yeah. And so you've done a lot of things over the years. WildWaffles.com is your current entrepreneurial business. It sounds as though you're really moving forward on that. I tried them. Thank you very much for the samples you sent over. I just want to ask you what you wish you'd known now, from 20 years ago. Go back 20 years, and what do you know now that you wish you'd known then?
That you just need to start. You know, I think that early on in my entrepreneurial career, you know, I worried so much about making sure that everything was right. You know, I got constipated by fear of, well, I can't do this because I need to make sure that this is right. And if I only had this, then I could do this. And the fact of the matter is that I just needed to start, you know, just to go out and make it work. And it's okay to clean up a mess behind you, because that's how you learn, you know, that you go out there and you make those mistakes. And so if I could go back, if I could tell 20-year-old me, you know, just go out and do it. Don't worry about it. You can fix it later.
And welcome back, everyone. That was Roger Sullivan. I'm laughing at the music, the shark music for Shark Tank here. Thanks, Eric. That was Roger Sullivan. You can find out more about Roger Sullivan and his business. He also writes a blog up there where he shares his ideas and passion at wiredwaffles.com. WIREDWAFFLES.com, wiredwaffles.com. And I always like to, when I talk with business people, I always like to think about the things I take away. And a couple of things I took away from that conversation with Roger was his comment about, you know, I was on Shark Tank. I didn't get any investors. I lost on Shark Tank, but I got my product in front of, or his business in front of 8 million viewers. So how can that be? You know, that's not a lose. That's a win-win, really. And the other thing I took away was him saying, you know, if I could talk to myself 20 years ago, I would tell myself, just get started. So many of us do get stuck in that analysis of paralysis, as I think Zig Ziglar used to call it, phase. But sometimes you really have to just, you know, there's a saying I like, you sometimes have to walk to the edge of the cliff, jump off the cliff, and build your wings on the way down. And Roger Sullivan said, if you make a mess on the way, you just clean up after yourself. Well, that's it for this week. One thing that I'm keeping in my head from actually watching Shark Tank, the program itself, is Mark Cuban's words. If you don't believe in yourself enough to get out there and talk about yourself and your business and your product, why should I write you a check? So I'm taking that, I'm keeping that in my mind. And we will be back next week with you. You can reach me at info@conversationslive.net if you have any questions or comments on today's show.
You can also reach me at Twitter at Vicky St. Clair, Facebook, Conversations Live, and also on 800-495-7617. Got distracted there because my cell phone was ringing. You can also catch me at 800-495-7617. Big thanks to my guests, Andrea Kay, AndreaKay.com, and Roger Sullivan. Thanks for making time on a Saturday so that we could bring our listeners your story today. Really appreciate it. See you next week. Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.
If you love dogs, tune in to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes live every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. We'll talk about everything dog and interview authors, experts, and amazing organizations, both locally and nationally. And don't even get me started on the pet food industry. I'm Julie Forbes. Find us online at www.dogradioshow.com and also as a free podcast on iTunes. The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, an evolved perspective on life with dogs.